This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
This show happens every weekday from 12 until 1, right there in the middle of your workday. And it's nice to have you with us for the ride. Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly, Chris Ranji today. We're going to talk to Benji Molina at 12:30. And if you would like to check in, you can at 314-436-7900. You can leave us comments if you're watching the show, streaming us live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're at KMOX Sports on Twitter. We are right there at the top. You'll find us, and we hope that you do. If you leave us a comment, there's a very good chance we will get to it during the show. So, boys, here we are tonight. We've got a 6:20 pregame show and a 7:15 first pitch as the Cardinals are back home against the Boston Red Sox, a team that is struggling in Claves. The Cardinals, early. We know it's early. We'll keep giving out that caveat, but things, for the most part, and there's some stuff in there to clean up, but the team, the results, they've been pretty good for the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I would agree with you. When you look at this team, they're not beating themselves. Wait a minute, let me do this. Can you hear me now?
We got you.
We got you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They're not beating themselves, and I think that's a real plus. They don't make a lot of mental mistakes. They're doing some things, pushing the envelope, making them putting themselves in a position where they'll be tough to play against. So I like the direction of where they're headed. And the young guys are starting to show some promise. We start with Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman. So I like the direction. They can only get better. And so let's just see what happens against Boston, who, as you mentioned, got out to a really slow start. They're a better team than what their record indicates. And hopefully they'll be even better starting on Monday.
Yeah, Boston just took 2 out of 3 from Milwaukee. They took the final two games of that series, so you hope that that wasn't the start of something for them and that they bring some momentum into this. The Cardinals will miss Sonny Gray. You'll see Wilson Contreras over the next few days. There's a lot of connections between these two organizations. But yeah, I like what we're seeing right now from the Cardinals. I don't know how you can't like what you're seeing right now. They play hard. They care. They're not, like Claves said, they're not going to go out and beat themselves any given night. They're not a perfect team. There's obviously still some red flags that are going up. There's the overall numbers from the bullpen are not great, although they did pitch pretty well in the final two games of the Washington series. So let this thing play out a little bit further. I hope that people appreciate the style in which the Cardinals are playing, and I'm not just talking about the aesthetics to it, but the fact that it's obvious that these young guys do care. And I'm hoping that more and more people get out to Busch Stadium and support this team, because I think it's a team worth people's support.
Let's talk about that caring. Where does it come from, do you believe? Is it a function of got a bunch of young guys who are trying to prove themselves? Is it coaching staff? Is it just, that's the makeup of these particular guys? What do you think it is?
I think it's a combination of everything you said. The coaching staff, I think, has a lot to do with the fact that they are doing more coaching and teaching than they ever have done before with these young guys. And they're obviously paying attention because they're getting some decent results. I think the fact that everybody now has a defined position. You know, you think about what third base looked like last year. You think about what second base looked like last year. The guys who were in question now have jobs, whether it's Weatherholt playing second. Nolan Gorman is going to be the third baseman most days of the week. He's going to be in the lineup virtually every day, one way or the other. So when you have those things working and guys are building off of what they were able to do last year, they came into camp ready to go. And I think with all the newfangled toys that they had to play with in spring training, we're starting to see how things are impacting the ball club.
I agree with everything Claves just said, and all I would add on is there's a couple things that I think are pretty important here. First off, I think this is the first time in Oliver Marmol's tenure that it's his team, it's his clubhouse, he's the guy who's setting the culture, and it's going to just kind of, he's going to be the leader in this thing. And it's a really good thing, because he's very good with younger players, and just this version of this team is the perfect type of group for an Oliver Marmol. And then I think the second thing, and this is why every time it gets brought up about, oh, do they need leadership? Do they need veterans? Things like that. The reason I'm so dismissive and the reason I kind of poo-poo that a lot is because of the makeup of the guys on this team. There are teams out there that need that veteran leader, that need that guy in the clubhouse. This is such a good group of just professional guys. And it's kind of funny to say that when they're so young, but I can look at a J.J. Weatherholt, I can look at a Mason Winn, I can look at an Alec Burleson, and I can say, I trust these guys to go do their job. I trust these guys to really care about what they're doing and the fact that they are a member of the St. Louis Cardinals. And I know I kind of sound rah-rah when I'm saying this, but I Claibs, you're in that clubhouse. You see what these guys are like. Everybody's going to hold everybody else accountable. We'll revisit it when it's August 1st and they've lost 12 of their last 15 or something. You know, that happens to every team over the course of 162 games. But I have so much faith in the makeup of these various individuals on this team.
I think the word we're looking for here is character, guys who understand how this works, and they're all growing together. It reminds me of when John Jay and Danny Descalso and Alan Craig and all those guys were in the minors together. They all came up together, and they didn't really have what you would call the clubhouse leader. They just learned how to win together as a unit, and I think we're seeing a little bit of that now, and that's a good thing. I mean, to pin your hopes on one person leading the way, I'm not sure if that works in this situation. I think everybody has a defined role. And the other thing, with the exception of J.J. Weatherholt, everybody else on the roster, that's on the field, has at least 2 years of big league experience. And I think that means more than you think. I know they talk about how young this team is, but yeah, look at how young they were when they first broke in, and it's just turned out to be a plus-plus.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everybody in the lineup. In fact, it is everybody in the lineup. There is nobody over the age of 27. Not in the starting lineup, not in the typical starting lineup they put out there. This is it is a really young team. And to have that many players, at least all at this point already, who feel like you feel like they get it. Right. We talk about Weatherholt a lot for somebody who's 23 years old. Just seems like he gets it. And you hear baseball people talk about it all the time. Oh, this guy, he just gets it. He just gets it. And it's really difficult to define. But I think that if you have this many young players who get it, that's a pretty good sign. It doesn't mean you're going to win right now, but it gives you a foundation, gives you the start of a foundation.
100%.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
All right. So I hate that we actually I take that back. I do not hate it, but I love that we are right now focusing on one player or giving one particular player a lot of attention. And it's because of what's been expected of him over the last couple of years, and he hasn't realized it. And again, I know this is still very early, but, you know, Derek wrote about him. Lynn has been writing about him. And it's really tough not to pay attention or a lot of it to what Jordan Walker has been doing at the start of this season. He has hit 5 home runs already. He's hitting close to 300. His OPS is over 1,000. He is in the 98th, 99th, 100th percentile of all these categories like hard hit rate and exit velocity, which he's always kind of there. He's always hit the ball hard, but he's barreling the ball too. He's, you know, in the upper 90s in percentile on that as well. The guy is just, he just looks good. He's striking out a lot, but as long as he's doing this other stuff, it doesn't really matter. Claibs, what you have seen from Jordan Walker at the start of this season, how encouraging is it to you? Are you still looking at it with skeptical optimism? How are you viewing him right now?
Well, I view it as a positive. You touched on something at the start of the season. The onus was on him, Nolan Gorman, guys who were former first-round picks, and you expect them to make a legitimate contribution. And what we're seeing from Jordan is maybe the maturity date has finally arrived, where he's made some adjustments. And I think the question will be, will he continue to make adjustments? Because teams will start to pitch him differently. It reminds me, I remember Willie McCovey. They used to talk about him when he first broke in. They weren't sure about him. And he struck out a little bit. And then all of a sudden, he stopped swinging the pitches he was getting himself out with, and everybody realized, uh-oh, this guy's figured it out. So I think in Walker's case, as you mentioned, he's going to strike out. That comes with the territory. But how he prevents himself from getting himself out, I think, is the key. You know, swinging at bad pitches and you know, not being ready to pull the trigger. We don't see as much of that as we've seen in the past. So I just think he's a guy that's really arrived maturity-wise and making the adjustments along the way. And, you know, we'll see if he can continue that.
Yeah, it's all you can ask him for do is what he's done so far. And I mean, I don't think anybody saw him coming out of the last series being the tied for the major league lead in home runs. But you give him so much credit for the work that he's put in. Claves, you said exactly what I would have said. So the next step is the league's going to start adjusting to what he's doing, and then he plays the game of where he adjusts back. And that's what separates a guy who has a very short tenure in Major League Baseball and a guy who can be a 10-year veteran is everybody is always adjusting. It's a game going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. So now, can we see Walker start to adjust back to the changes that are going to be made against him? And I would say we're probably pretty close to where there's going to be enough film on him where teams are going to start changing the way that they are approaching him. He's doing such a good job at making better swing decisions. So those pitches that you could throw to him last year, knowing that he was either going to swing and miss or he's going to swing and make terrible contact and was going to roll into some type of an out, well, he's not doing that. So now teams are going to go back to the drawing board and they're going to try to figure out, well, then how do we get this guy out? And when they figure that out, Walker's going to have to figure out, well, you can't get me out this way.
And you know what you're talking about with the plate discipline and what his decision making at the plate has been. I mean, the numbers are showing it too, because he has, and there's a pretty good decrease in the amount of pitches that he's swinging outside of the zone. He's swinging at more pitches inside the zone, and he's not falling behind early as much. He used to be down 0-1 pretty much right away, and he's not doing that. He's improved in that area too, and so he's getting himself into better counts. All of this is measurable. It's not just, I think this is what's happening with him. It is actually happening with him. His discipline the first couple of weeks of the season has been really good and strong. It's just a matter of keeping that up all season. Because as you know, with the young players, at some point things misalign and they just have to realign them before it gets out of hand.
I would agree.
Yeah. It's just I'm very encouraged by what he's doing. I couldn't be happier. I hope he is able to keep this up. But we are, you know, we're very early in.
You know, I'll tell you, another guy we probably haven't talked enough about is what Victor Scott has been able to do. He has turned the bunny into a real weapon offensively. Whether he's moving a runner along or getting himself on base, the defense has been solid again. And he seems like he's come out of his shell also with regard to making some adjustments from the offseason and using a different approach when the spring training started. I think he's a guy that we ought to start paying a little bit more attention to also.
It'd be nice to have somebody, yeah, at the bottom of the order, if he can get on base a little bit, set things up for J.J. Weatherholt, who has also been getting on base. That could help them score a lot of runs this year. That's Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly. This is the Gas House Gang, as I mentioned. Benji Molina, a former catcher, he is now calling baseball on the Spanish side for the Cardinals. He will be with us at 12:30. It is the Gas House Gang on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. You can watch the show live. Leave us your comments there. We'll try to get to some of them before the show's over. Claves, Pauly, Ranji on KMOX.
Definitely being able to go out and help the team win. Definitely more focused, more ready to get the ball and prove myself that I can be better.
What does that look like adjustment-wise for you?
Adjustment-wise, just not aiming more middle, trying to be a little bit more precise with the throws, playing a little more corners instead of just throwing it over the plate.
Dustin May, this was from Cardinals TV, and he has gotten off to a start here. We were just talking about Jordan Walker here on the Gas House Gang and how good of a start he's off to. We've mentioned J.J. Weatherholt, who's been contributing as well. But it hasn't been all great, guys. There have been some struggles here with a Cardinals team that is 7-5 so far this year. Claiborne, Pauly, Ranji with you on Gas House Gang. And So for May here, who's going to make the start tonight against Boston, against, you know, the former team of his, we've got Chaim Bloom, his team facing his former team. He's already faced both of his former teams here with Tampa in the opening series and now Boston here. There's a lot of intrigue in this one tonight. Wilson Contreras, the Cardinals are going to see tonight. But for May specifically, Klaibs, what have you seen with him? Why do you think things have been so difficult for him in this first couple of starts of the season?
Well, it's a good question for sure. Maybe he's in the middle of the plate a little too much. You know, that seems to be the issue. The velocity is there, the movement's there, but, you know, he's probably in the middle of the plate a little bit too much for his liking. And that's something that can be adjusted. I like what's coming out of his hand. It's just the location isn't where it should be.
I'm confused by it, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't know how to answer that question. Klaibs is probably right about it being a little bit more over the plate, but when you've got there's a lot of guys who have the same velocity as Dustin May who don't have great command and leave stuff over the plate all the time, and they get away with it because of just how hard they do throw. So he threw out the idea of maybe it's the sequencing. If this keeps going on, maybe we start looking and start questioning whether or not he happens to be tipping something out there. But it's very odd because the velocity and the movement, it absolutely is there. All the things you want to be there to be successful, it's there right now for Dustin May, but it's not resulting in outs. He's given up 13 runs in 7 1/3 innings, and he has a 16 ERA. So it's a really weird thing that's happening right now with May.
It's strange because, you know, it's either location within the strike zone. It is maybe hitters do know what's coming, but he's giving up a lot of really hard hit balls. That's happening a lot. I mean, the exit velocity on him is high compared to what other pitchers around the game are giving up. So I don't get it either. I mean, the velocity, usually when it's there, as long as your control is there, you should be okay. Maybe he's missing inside the zone too much and not spotting it where he wants to. Whatever it is, I can't imagine this continues for a whole lot longer. I do think he is better than this, and I'll be stunned if it does. I mean, if this goes on for a while and he's got an ERA over 10, I'll be surprised by that.
I think we'll all be surprised by that. You know, this is one of the few times in the last few years that he's actually been full healthy. And just getting himself acclimated to not having a injury riddled off season and things of that nature is something he's probably trying to work through. But I'm like you, I just don't see this going on much longer. I think he'll find his way and he'll be the guy that the Cardinals hope to sign for.
Yeah, overall,
he's got the highest ceiling of everybody in the rotation. So
no question.
Yeah, he's a big part of what this team wants to do this year, and he doesn't want to go out there and have 16 ERA. He's working hard. He's a pro. He's doing the things he needs to do. It's just it's been a very tough start for him.
Yeah, I hope that it starts to improve tonight. We'll get that first pitch at 7:15. He's going to have it. But as for the pitching staff, generally speaking, and maybe we should talk more about the bullpen here. First couple of weeks of the season, and I know going into the year, I think we all figured that the Cardinals would pitch okay this year. Maybe the bullpen would even be pretty good. And a lot of times it will take some time for a bullpen to sort of settle into, you know, what it's actually going to be. But early season so far, your thoughts on it?
You know, when you have a bullpen like this and the options that Ollie has, you know, you're going to have those moments. I think the plus is well, while they're not pitching as well as you want them to, they're not walking a bunch of people. I mean, think about how many times we've seen bullpens just have a walk-a-thon, and there's nothing worse for a manager to deal with than watching a guy just throw ball after ball after ball. They're putting it in play, and then when you look at a couple of games, they weren't getting crushed. I mean, they were just hitting them where they weren't. So it's not a situation where teams are having, you know, PM batting practice against them. It's just sometimes the luck of the draw just doesn't work their way. But I think that that's something that's certainly fixable, especially from guys we've seen in the past that we know they can get the job done. We've seen them do it before. This isn't a trial by error with a lot of the guys in the bullpen. We've all seen them be more successful than what they are. And I think they'll eventually get back to that.
Yeah, first domino is Matt Svensson being Matt Svensson. If he can do that, there's some other dominoes that are just going to fall behind him. He's such an important part of the bullpen. He's a guy who can cover multiple innings. And people think how wonderful the bullpen was last year. And there was two different versions of it. There was the version before the trade deadline, and then they were just as good after the deadline, even after they moved on from some really important pieces. This organization has a pretty solid track record over the last couple of years of doing the things they need to do to have an effective bullpen. And through 10 games last year, they had a 5.7 bullpen ERA. This year, it was around 6, so they were basically in the same area. Everybody was freaking out about the bullpen this year. You've got some interest. At some point in time, like if you've got a Hunter Dobbins and a Richard Fitz and maybe eventually a Bryson Motz, if you've got these guys down at Memphis pitching well, even though they're starters, at some point you can't just leave them at Memphis, you know, emptying out. You've got to do something where maybe one of those guys gets brought up or somebody in the rotation currently gets moved to the – like there's things that can be done. There's pieces that can be moved around. Of all the areas of this team that I had the most confidence in going into the season, it was that it was going to be a pretty good bullpen. I still think that, and the first 10 games having a 6-plus ERA, that doesn't bother me because I have a belief in this group.
Well, however they get there, they're going to have to start missing some bats a little bit more because they've got the lowest strikeout rate. I take that back. They have the second lowest strikeout rate of any other bullpen so far through 2 weeks. The only team that's worse is the team they just saw in the Nationals. So if they can get that number up, and they were below average in that category last year, it wasn't like they were particularly good at getting strikeouts. Starters, I think, are dead last in strikeout percentage so far.
And which is a little strange considering it seemed like the philosophy of swing and miss was brought back. Certainly that was the motto from spring training. And I thought we'd have bigger and better results from a strikeout situation. But again, you know, we're talking, 13 games in, 12 games in. So a lot of things are going to change here in the next few days.
That's right. Both offensively and defensively, I would imagine. And hopefully pitching-wise tonight, the Cardinals can get a good start from Dustin May. I know he desperately wants one. As I mentioned, 6:20 pregame, 7:15 first pitch right here on KMOX. The Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, Overhead Door Company, Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and by Budweiser. When we come back, we will talk to Benji Molina. He is next on KMOX.
Now, the Cardinals Conversation on KMOX. Sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
The Gas House Gang on KMOX every weekday at noon. And Mike Claiborne, Chris Ronji today. We're getting ready for Cardinals baseball tonight. Looking forward to it. Going to be at the ballpark myself. And cannot wait for that. So we now go to one of our favorite guys, Benji Molina, who is on the Spanish radio broadcast for your St. Louis Cardinals. He joins us now on KMOX. Good afternoon, Benji. How are you?
How are you guys? I'm doing good, man. I'm really excited for today. We're back at Busch, and we have a really, really tough two teams coming into Busch. So I'm excited, man. I'm doing good.
Well, it's good to have you with us, Benji. We've got a team here that's playing pretty well, you know, from the first couple of weeks of the season. Can't take a whole lot away from it, but is there anything that you have taken from this first 13 games, 12 games?
Wow. I think one of the things that stands out is Jordan Walker. The way he has started this season is unreal, man. The past couple of weeks, four series of the season, the beginning of the season, he's on a tear, man, and it's so exciting to see his success. I know people are saying, hey, we don't give away MVP's performance for 2 weeks, right? But it's really encouraging. It's really, really cool for him. We're really excited to obviously see him have success. So hopefully he can keep it up all year and see what he can do, man, because every time he touched that ball, he hits a hard, and it could be something exciting all year. I think the bullpen struggling obviously needs to get better out there. And I know we have the arms to do it. So the starting rotation is doing okay. I think it's some guys are having better times than others. They have shown that they don't give up. The team has shown that even when they're behind, they can come back at any moment. And that's the best feeling for a fan, and that's the best feeling for a team. So I'm excited, man.
Oh, we don't hear Klaibs right now. I need to think we might have his mic muted.
Okay, we'll get that.
There you go.
Out.
We got you.
You got me?
Yep.
All right, Benji, give me your thoughts on the ABS. Is it working out like you thought it would?
You know what? I'm an old school man, Klaibs. I like the mistakes of umpires. I like the fact that we can steal strikes, you know, behind the plate. We made it a thing. You know, going up in our careers, we stole so many strikes from the umpires. So now it's all fair game, I guess. It's all fair game. But it's a strategy, too. You don't want to burn. We had Tampa Bay burning one ABS challenge in the first inning, third batter of the game, and then they found themselves in a hole because they didn't have any more later on challenges. So, man, the only thing I can tell you, ABS, I think it's exposing umpires, the element of human, you know, the human element, it's exposing them. But if you notice, a lot of the calls they miss, it's right on the corner, man. Like on a live eye, it's a strike on a catcher behind. How many catchers ABS challenge we've seen that they miss, even behind the plate? So, you know, it's a tough one. It's a tough one for everybody. Umpire can get exposed, but also the players have to be smart about challenging, because not every time that you see a strike is a strike, you know, so you can lose those things.
Did you ever, and now that we're getting to a point in the game where pitch framing is not as important as it used to be, it's still a skill, but it is not with this ABS system quite as necessary as it used to be. Did you ever have any discussions with your brothers about which of you was the best? Because my understanding, Jose was better than both of you, you and Yachty at pitch framing. Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah, Jose was better, but don't let him know, please. Don't let him know. Let's keep it between ourselves, okay? Yachty was pretty good at it. I think you still have to frame it, because let's say you don't have ABS challenges and you get the call from the umpire and the ball is, it's one ball away,
yep,
which the ABS would have tell is a ball, but you, by framing it, make it a strike. And they have no challenges. You see what I'm saying? So you still have to work in it, in the game. You still have to work on your framing, because once these ABS challenges are gone, they cannot challenge, and you can still strike.
In terms of catching, Benji, for this team, the collective work that you've seen from Pajes and Pozo defensively, I mean, looking at the metrics that are out there right now, this hasn't been a particularly good defensive unit yet in terms of catching. How have you looked at the job those two guys have done so far?
I really do look at him heavier, probably because I was a catcher, right? You know, it's behind in my system. So I pay attention to what they're doing. I think Yachty coming over, hanging out with them, talking about baseball, talking about framing, talking about blocking, calling the game, for me, is one of the most important parts of this game. You can get an average pitcher and you can make him good pitcher after you call a good game and you do the things that you need to do behind the plate. You're smarter. You pitch to the guy who you need to. You don't get hurt by Aaron Judge, but you get hurt by Rice or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So being smart behind the plate can get you to an average pitcher, can get you up higher than that and can get you great games, man. I think it's very important that everybody understand calling the game, being smart out there, it is really important for any team in the league.
Benji, how much prep work did you have to put in as a player, as a catcher before a game? Because, you know, you see some of these guys that put 6-7 hours in leading up to a start. And there's a lot more information than there was when you were playing. But for you on a regular day when you had to play, how much time did you have to put into it before the game?
Oh, man, I think it was close to an hour because you have to go through every hitter. And this is only talking about how am I going to pitch to the Padres or how am I going to pitch to Boston. So it's almost like an hour you spend there. You have your little book. You put your notes, the most important ones, the counts that they're hot, the counts that they pitches that they don't hit. Are they first pitch swingers? Are they aggressive? Are they taking? Are they good with two strikes? I mean, it could go on. And we have to have the brain to keep it up because here comes the first inning. First three innings is easy. All of a sudden, they've seen your pitcher, and you have to be prepared for a plan B, C, D. At times, you get to, you don't hope so, but you get to the F, and you're like, oh, man, what am I going to do now? But you have to be prepared. I did it. I was prepared. The flight was 5 hours. I was up maybe 3 hours with my brother, Jose, going through notes, going through a little of a videos or something, writing down books, booklets of the hitters. But then also I have to study the freaking pitchers because I'm a hitter. So what the heck, man? It was a long time in the video room. And I saw it with Yadi, too. I thought I was doing an exaggerated job. But, man, Yadi, it's on the video room. That's why he was so good. He knew their tendencies. He knew the long swings. He knew the short swing, the pull guys, the opposite hitters. He knew, and we had to know all this. So it's so important to be ahead of the game. Also, you have to anticipate. You have to know who you're pitching to because you want that guy matchups. Or you know, you don't mind a walk because you want the next guy up. You have to be on top of your game if you're in a major league uniform as a catcher. It's not only hitting. It's also like really, really extremely really on time on what you call the game.
You know, I used to have this conversation with a former colleague of mine with the White Sox who was a former pitcher, and he used to talk about game calling and the catcher needing to know the game plan. But he would always say it doesn't matter. It's still the pitcher's responsibility. Whatever he's calling from behind the plate, it is still on the pitcher, no matter what. Do you think that's true? Is it ultimately the pitcher's responsibility, or do you believe that catchers are responsible for the way a game is called?
No, I don't think either one of them are. I think both of them together works against them, against the other team. If you work together, first of all, the pitcher is going to trust you that you did your job. I had a guy who won 2 Cy Youngs, Lincecum. He did not watch video of the hitters. I did, and I wrote down everything. So he had no chance on calling me or saying no to my calls. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because he did not know how Matt Kemp or people from the Dodgers, they hit. I knew it because he doesn't watch any video. So it starts with both of them. I think you have to, as a pitcher, you have to trust your catcher. Imagine you go out there and you don't know how to pitch to, in this case, one of the best guys, in the league, whoever it is, but you don't know and you don't remember how to pitch this guy, and then you don't trust the catcher. It is horrible out there. You don't know what to pitch. You don't know what to throw. So I think both of them need to work together, and if they don't, at least one of them has to be in control. You know, you're not going to shake me off if you don't watch video, if you're not prepared, if you don't write notes, you know? I think it works both ways. The pitcher, 100%, on making the pitch. You call fastball away, 100% have to be on fastball away. If you are 70% thinking slider, and then 30%, oh, he called fastball. Here we go. It ain't going to work. Maybe a lot of these pitchers today wish they were throw hard, but down the middle, you know, challenging the hitter, or they cannot control the corners. It's different because you're just going your power against their power. That's different. But if you have a guy that controls the corners, knows when to throw up, knows when to bounce a ball or something, You better be prepared. At least one of us have to be prepared for that challenge.
What was your favorite kind of pitcher to catch? Was it a guy just threw straight fastballs, threw hard? Is that what you liked?
No. I love the guy who goes seven innings with 2-3 strikeouts. But he's out there in the seven. He's out there in the eight. I caught great pitchers, man. Roy Halladay was always in the ninth inning, and he had 3 strikeouts. Cliff Lee, he was always in the eighth inning, and he had 3-4 strikeouts. Tim Lincecum and Bartolo Colon throwing harder as he did. He was in the eighth inning, but guess what? He only had 2 strikeouts. So guys who are not afraid of their movement on the ball, the guys are not afraid to throw strike in the zone, making the guys aggressive because you throw strikes, but you're counting on your movement. You're counting on the off balance of the hitter. You're counting on knowing what you're doing out there. So you have those type of games. You tell me, I'll throw 100, but I'll go 4 innings. That ain't going to do it for me. And he doesn't help the bullpen anyways. But you tell me a guy who throws 90 to 93, 90 to 94 maybe, and he's moving the ball around. He's in the seventh inning, and he has 2 strikeouts. I'll take that any day. Like I think it was Mike Grievy when he won the game and he didn't have any strikeouts, but he won 7 or 8. And he won the game.
Hey, Benji,
I'd rather see that.
Final question for me, Benji. Is it my imagination or is it easier to steal bases because I don't see pitchers paying enough attention to that guy on first base? Keeping him close.
That problem started when the coaches called the throws over. When they started calling the throws over from the dugout, that's when that problem started. Because before, I don't know if you remember, Clicks, but before, the veterans, they look at the runner. The hell with you. You have like 3.5 steps away from first. I don't care what count it is. I'm going to first. I'm going to keep you close. You know, you ain't going to steal this base on me. Are you crazy? But now it's more of a guy from a bench coach or somebody like that give you a sign. Okay, you're throwing over. And it could go 3 pitches and you're not throwing over. So the pitcher gets used to that. So they're not even looking at the runner. They're not even looking at what's happening in the situation. A lot of them, think about this, a lot of the stolen bases this year happens after a throw over. You throw one-time throw over the first and they get bigger leads and they go because they're not expect another throw over. So it's just automatic. It's just robotic out there for that matter. Once the manager or the coach that called the sign started calling the throws overs, it became easier for these guys to steal bases too.
Benji Molina, it's always great to talk with you, and talking catching with you is the best. So thank you for visiting with us today, and enjoy the homestand.
Oh, heck yeah. Thank you guys for having me in your show. Thank you. Thank you. We'll see you guys out in the field.
You got it, Benji. Thanks.
Benji Molina with us. He is going to be on the call tonight on the Spanish side as the Cardinals will host the Boston Red Sox. A series begins tonight at Busch Stadium. A few more moments to go with Mike Claiborne. I'm Chris Ronji. This is the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Now back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Just a few more moments with Mike Claiborne here on the Gas House Gang on KMOX. And again, brought to you by Budweiser, Saliga Heating and Cooling, Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck. We appreciate all of our sponsors on this show. Claibs, we're still doing the Friday night thing, are we not?
We start tonight at the across the street.
Is it Ballpark Village? Yeah, so it's
Cardinal Nation.
Yeah, it's a Cardinals Nation now.
It's going to be a Cardinals Nation, and we'll start tonight. I believe we have Chip and Brad and Danny Rexham that are going to join Ricky Horton and myself. So I'm looking forward to that, and we'll be there every Friday night for the home games this season.
Are you going to be on that lower level? Are you upstairs, or what's going on?
I believe, that's a great question. I want to say the upper level.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. I know they were testing out everything yesterday, so I just go where they tell me. But you can find us. I would just say that. Just come on over. You'll be able to find us. We'll have a good time tonight. Good tickets are available for tonight's game and throughout the weekend. And the weather should be pretty good. I know they talked a little bit about some rain perhaps this evening, but I think it may happen a little later tonight. But certainly through the weekend, the weather's going to be good. So everybody should come on down. Check out the Cardinals.
That's right, man. We haven't gotten to that 98 degrees with 85% humidity yet. So just enjoy it while it lasts.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, with our weather, you know how things can be unpredictable.
That's right. That's what St. Louis, Midwest, you got it, man. It's about as bad as it gets. All right, Claves, enjoy tonight. We'll see you there.
All right. Have a great game.
All right, my friend. That is Mike Claiborne. I'm Chris Ronji. If you missed the Gas House Gang earlier on, you can go back and get the podcast. They're available wherever you get your podcast or the Odyssey app or Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. They will be there to watch them as well. Gas House Gang is back on Monday at noon on 104.1 FM KMOX.